Hi, this is Vinay, and welcome to XRC Pod. In this episode, we talk about brain-computer interface, or BCI. If you think that's exciting, it gets even better, because our guests are the Chief Commercial Officer, Kim Olds, and President and Neurologist, Olivier Ollier of Emotive, a leading company in BCI products. Talking about how we can control objects with our mind and the opportunities that opens up can get very exciting and deep. So deep, in fact, we decided to split this episode into two parts so we can process it all. So here's part one of two of this episode of XRC Pod, Brain Matters, How Brain-Computer Interfaces Extend Reality. With that, let's jump in.
Hi, I'm Kirby Shibaga.
Hey, I'm Nirav Desai.
And along with our program director, Stephen Shu, I am Vinay Narayan, and welcome to this episode of XRC Pod. And today we're going to go pretty deep. When we think about technology, we think of it in terms of a tool in which when we interact using conscious, explicit expressions. We use a lot of design to make the finite input and output match a specific type of user with the intent to make this loop feel as natural as possible. As human beings, however, we don't interact this way with each other. The purpose of XR, it's really to create a natural two-way interaction, truly putting the person at the center. These are platforms that start to create the visual and physical interfaces, but also represent the foundation for immersion. So maybe we can take a quick fast forward to the future when AR glasses are indistinguishable from your prescription lenses. Are we really going to walk down the street using hand gestures and audio commands as a primary interface for our devices, looking as if we are on some psychedelics talking to ourselves walking down the street? Or are we going to interact with our mind to drive decisions with intent? And in this episode, we're going to talk about brain-controlled interface, or BCI. BCIs read signals from the brain and use machine learning algorithms to translate the signals into external action, allowing for direct communication with the external device. This may sound futuristic, but BCI is here today and in many use cases, including a portfolio of products. I'm not a neuroscientist or a founding team member of a BCI company. Fortunately, our guests are. In this episode, our guests are Kim Old, Chief Commercial Officer and founding team member of Emotive, and Professor Olivier Ollier, neuroscientist and president of Emotive. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
We are so excited. If I had a BCI device, you could see all different parts of my brain kind of firing. In this, we really want to cover a lot. What is BCI? Some of the myths, right, when it comes to these profound technologies, but also just really walk away. This stuff is here today. It's really driving that change. And what does the future of work really look like? And of course, we want to cover user privacy and data security. But our first question really is the most important one of the episode, which is, if you could be a supervillain, who would you be and why?
Olivier, you want to go first?
I would be Kim.
Touche.
She's the most powerful of all. She's nice, she's smart, and she can sell.
We're going to have a post-meeting after that. It's going to be a whole other podcast. For me, I thought about it for some time, and it was kind of in between Thanos and Magneto.
Ooh, that's good. I can see that. What about you, Nira?
Yeah, so I'm not so much a name, but more of a superpower, and it's the ability to be a conversational terrorist. You know, be that guy who walks into a room and says something awkward and kills the conversation right there.
Don't you already have that?
Yeah,
I do. Actually,
this is not a power you currently have. This is not a self-promotion episode. How about you, Kirby?
Yeah, I was looking through a huge list on Wikipedia just to get some more ideas there, and I picked out Monocle. And apparently he was a businessman in the field of optics, so that sort of ties in with the whole XR part of it.
Wow, Kirby, you've been both obscure and relevant at the same time. That's both a superpower and, yeah, that's purely evil. I was thinking about, you know, what makes a really good villain? And, you know, really good villains really tug at the core of not just a superhero as their superhero persona, but also them when they're maybe, you know, when you're Clark Kent, for example. So in that spirit, I was thinking about which superhero has the most ego, and I was thinking about Tony Stark and Iron Man. And if you were a billionaire, you care about business and you care about what you invest. And so I was thinking about I would be iron deficiency man. For the main reason, if you're a billionaire, you care about SEO, and nothing would get under your skin more than every time you look for Iron Man, Iron Deficiency Man would follow along. And the business that you could build, you could be an accidental billionaire, just on SEO optimization. All right. So earlier we covered kind of high-level definition of BCI. Mm-hmm. So much more to unpack there. Kim, you want to start us off with what is actually BCI?
Yeah, so BCI actually stands for Brain-Computer Interface. It actually fundamentally is based on EEG technology, electroencephalography. It's actually, EEG has been around for ages. And so the concept and the basis for the technology is not new, but the applications of it is. So when you think about EEG, you think of it in a medical context where you're going to a clinic or a lab and they're fitting you with a hair cap with all these sensors. You're tethered to a computer and it's these long hours of just sitting still and getting the brain data collected. Fast forward to now, we've got these skeletal devices that are portable, wireless, that can be self-fitted, are a tenth of the cost, and have the ability to be interfaced with beyond just in a medical context, but now you can control physical and virtual objects through machine learning algorithms. You're able to apply it, in real world health and wellness, looking at safety. There's so many new different ways to interpret. We've seen the technology leverage from artists creating installations with it, musicians creating music with their brain waves. And that's all something that's happened within the last 8 years, let alone, in the next 5 years.
Technology is always fascinating. BCI, I think, has to really be at the top of the list. Olivier, what does it really mean to know what the brain is doing? And from a neuroscientist perspective, how should we think about BCI?
The interesting thing is that we hear so many businesses nowadays claiming they are human-centric. Explain to me how you can be human-centric without having information about how the brain works. Well, it's not mandatory because we are a lot more than our brains, but excluding our brains from our human-centric strategy doesn't make much sense to me. And what we need to better understand is how we process information, how we influence each other, and how others are influencing us. Understanding the brain is information processing, how we react to things, how we interact with all the different environments, plural environments, physical, digital, economical, societal, human, things you imagine. And on top of everything, as if it were not complex enough, we also have to deal with our own history and our past and our future that is somehow embedded in our intentions. Our intentions or what we want our future to be. And this is at play too.
So when I first started hearing about BCI, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about it, I would say. And in that, are we actually reading thoughts or is it something different in kind? So I normally have a Springsteen quote through all this, but I'm going to switch it up this time in honor of a good friend. I'm going to quote his favorite band, Information Society. I want to know what you're thinking. Tell me what's on your mind. Yes, I love that reaction. But seriously, does BCI read thoughts or is it more reading more biometrics?
Professor Awkward strikes again.
Thank you. You don't need a BCI in order to know what some people are thinking. The fact that, the people listening to this podcast cannot see what just happened, but as you were speaking, your friend laughed and you said, oh, you reacted to his facial expression. So this is a way to guess. And I think when it comes to mind reading, I think the most accurate term, and I'm going to be the scientist here again, just put my academic hat, would be mind guessing. We're guessing things. And we're guessing things based on an ensemble of data that we're collecting. There are the facial expressions that you will try to decrypt. There are movements. There are, eyebrows moving. But also, you can use some information that can be collected with our technology or brain technology in general. So what you pick up in our case with emotive technology is electric activity in the brain. You've got electric activity that allows different parts of a brain to communicate. And there is no such thing as a plug you would put in the brain that would just show your inner thoughts and hidden desires on a screen. But thanks to machine learning, we're able to track in real time things like attention, visual or auditory attention. We can track your level of stress at the cognitive level. We can also track mental load sometimes. And there are a bunch of things that we are able to track based on those information that we collect. Then you can mind guess what the person is doing.
So much to unpack there. You know, I'm sure, Kim, when it comes to these type of early technologies, a lot of your customers, especially your early customers, they understand what they need, at least at a high level. They understand the technology set to a certain extent, or maybe the problem that they're trying to solve for. How are you addressing these questions to your customers?
Well, I think it's more about an excitement about the technology and what it can do. But because it's such a new industry for a lot of the companies and organizations and people, you know, they don't know what the applications can be. You know, the Neuron was right. And people think, oh, you can read my mind if I put this device on. That's not the case. Being able to understand how you apply it, understanding what the potential is, how to integrate it with your current products or services is really a lot of what I do.
So I really like what you said, Olivier, about the human aspect of this. And of course, we've had various devices, you know, starting with Fitbit and ways to quantify human attributes and, you know, the quantified self to hopefully better ourselves. But I'm really curious, like for both of you, why you started the company? Kind of what is the ultimate goal that you hope to achieve that this technology can achieve?
Yeah, you know, speaking to Tom, the founder, I mean, it came from a passion of just being completely infatuated with the brain and the brain's potential, and yet not really understanding how to be able to tap into that and how to be able to leverage that. And the fact that it was so closed off. And so finding a way to be able to create technology that was more accessible, that allowed more people to be able to play with it and explore with it and find new ways to be able to apply it. You know, so our system isn't one specific use case for it. And we provided a means for people to be able to access it. And do different things, like I mentioned, from creating art, music, new ways of thinking about the brain and how to leverage it beyond just, you know, going to hospital or clinic. That was really exciting. You know, seeing somebody be able to move something with your mind, that was really incredible. And there's like a magic like that, you know, from a Star Wars perspective. But then once you delve deeper into the technology and what it could do, the impact that it had and or can have was really what made me want to continue on with the company and stay as long as I had.
It's think about it. It's being able to provide access to brain technology and by extension, in some cases, brain health to the largest amount of people. For whomever has undergone a brain scan, whether for scientific research or medical reasons, we're talking about equipment that can cost up to a couple of millions, weigh tons, requires you to go in a closed facility that is isolated from the real world. What Emotive has provided is a solution to record the brain everywhere. One of my favorite bands, Depeche Mode, has just been inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and their 1988 album is Music for the Masses. Emotive is about neuroscience for the masses. It's really, really bringing neuroscience to the masses.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I did notice on the website you have like an open source project there for and a Unity plugin. So yeah, I mean, it's very cool to open it up to make it accessible to researchers and just hobbyists even, I guess. Speaking of accessibility, I guess that could be another good use case.
Oh, yeah. And I think this is one of the reasons I wake up in the morning, is to realize that it's one cool thing to be able to fly a drone with your mind, or me in my DJ sets to be able to control some of the light show with my brainwaves. But when you see my friend Rodrigo, who was shot in the back 29 years ago as he was driving his car, driving a Formula One with his mind 2 years ago, thanks to our technology, and for this technology to be employed by people to control their wheelchairs, or for some kids who have sensory motor deficiencies, being able to create art with their mind, this is what literally drives my passion for neuroscience. I started as a scientist, and it's a very egocentric job. You learn, you learn, you learn. And I reached a point where I said, okay, I learned so many things. How can I contribute to helping people? And this is where my path crossed with Emotive, because there was the technology that Tan and Jeff found created that made this incredible science not only accessible to everyone, but still rigorously, very rigorous at the scientific level. And I think that matters too, being able to leverage science in order to improve the lives of people by creating art, by allowing people who could not move to control things with their mind, their TV, write emails, their wheelchair, or our friend Rodrigo in Brazil to drive a Formula One car and then challenge Lewis Hamilton, the seven-time world champion. I'm still amazed.
Well, I think the industry is very fortunate to have both you and Kim, such passion and such vision to drive these technologies that are critical. I want to talk a little bit more about the specific use cases, because especially as you unpack what we're doing today with BCI and with Emotive in particular, you start to really look and understand how real this technology is and how applicable and tangible it is. Kim, as you look at these use cases and Olivier, what would you say, Kim, is the problem you're solving, and what are some great use cases that highlight that?
Yeah, I think, when you think about EEG, it was mostly confined in that clinical lab. We've been able to make the technology in a way that allows us to be able to observe and measure the brain in context. So being able to have it integrated into your routines, your daily life, and be able to move as you naturally do, all the while collecting this data and being able to interpret it in real time and have you be able to make more informed decisions about what you're doing, how you're doing it, based off of that data.
So I'm really curious, I've never played with a device like this before. Even though I'm kind of a gadget guru, I'll probably have to get one now. But when you mentioned, Olivier, about controlling lights while you're in a DJ set, is that your conscious mind that's controlling the light, or can your subconscious mind, do you get into it enough where you don't even have to think about it, but the signal to control the light on, off, or what it is, does that just occur?
When I'm performing as a DJ or live as a musician, I'm really into the music first. So the algorithm is picking up what is happening in my brain and converting it into information or instructions, commands that allow for some digital art to be created, I would say, independent of my will. It's different when you are using our technology and you've got a drone in front of you and you're trying to make the drone fly. And to give you an idea, this requires for you to pay attention, as you can imagine. To give you an idea, we did some activations at an event in Dubai, and within 2 days, almost 500 people flew a drone with their mind, just to let you know and to give you an order of how easy it is just to learn two commands, take off and land. Of course, if you want to do more complex things, it requires more time. But the power of the algorithms, the fact that we've accumulated so much data, so much experience, that we've been feeding the algorithms over the years, has allowed to reduce the training time for simple tasks. Of course, you can learn other tasks. And further to that, it all depends what your intention is in a moment, you know. I also use this technology in order to control some of the filters on my synthesizers, either as plugins or even the vintage ones, because you can control some of the filters like that. Then it's intentional. But just like everything we do, I'd say neurotech is picking up who we are. And as humans, sometimes we're doing intentional things, and sometimes we have reactions and sometimes actions that are below our level of consciousness. And neurotech is just participating in that. It's just becoming an integral and integrated part of the ecosystem that we are as humans in various environments.
Yeah. Adding to that, like there's obviously an intentional part where you can apply pattern recognition, machine learning, and the fact that we've got sensors that can observe those brain patterns to control physical and virtual objects. And the step by step is I'm gonna do a resting brain state. I'm gonna do an actual recording of what my intention for turning a light on and off is. And then every time I think about that same pattern, the software will be able to initiate that light turning on and off. But there's also this passive application of the technology where, and I think this is really going to be the future application of it, is I can walk into a smart home environment and it detecting maybe my stress levels, my focus, these different cognitive metrics that Olivier mentioned previously, and then even in combination with other biometric devices that I'm wearing, have that smart home environment adjust to be able to help me relax. I'm had a long day. I'm really stressed out. I walk into my home. It detects, you know, that my stress levels. It has, you know, maybe preset metrics for the thermostat to be able to lower the lighting to adjust, and suddenly it's intuitive. It's connected to the person, the human being, as they walk in and then interacts in that way, instead of this analog, I have to control, you know, flip switches, voice command, or initiate a command. It's going to just intuitively respond to the data that's coming through, all from these different devices that are out now. And I think that's really more exciting than just, I'm going to think about something to happen and it happens. Instead, it's going to take this human within the loop of all the technology around it and really have it adjust and provide a more personalized experience for that person.
So, Kim, that was a really good point, and I'm trying to break down kind of what you said and what you and Olivia said in kind of a few levels. And then if I draw an analogy, say, to a Fitbit or a normal wearable that's just monitoring my blood pressure, it's interpreting insight from my biometrics that is completely unconscious, right? It's just reporting the biology and determining factors on top of that. Now, if you add what the brain is doing, right, the consciousness, we're also monitoring our own heart rate in a very different way. To tell me if this analogy works or not, just so the audience can understand, if you're there, the intentional is more that consciousness looking at it and making a judgment, hey, you're breathing heavily or your heart rate is high. Whereas the subconscious is, more the Fitbit just doing that and determining at a certain point, set you alert that, hey, you should calm down. Doing the same type of analysis for brainwaves, is that fair to say that, you know, the unintentional and that more natural or background process is similar to a Fitbit or a blood pressure monitor, whereas training for certain brain waves and certain brain patterns is the intentional, or is there an additional, which can you detect intention?
Yes.
On brain waves? You can. Okay. Sorry. That
yes.
Was
yes, you can. It's like any other biosignal that is related to how we function. There are things that we realize, yeah, that we're conscious of, and some things we're not. Your heart rate might, increase very rapidly without you realizing it at first. Generally, you pick that up very quickly. But with a brain, you can do exactly the same kind of closed loop mechanism, meaning that similarly that you can sense your pulse with your finger on your throat or on your wrist, that you can try to monitor your heart rate with your Fitbit and breathe in order to lower it down. There are applications that are doing what is called neurofeedback. And neurofeedback is the brain equivalent to biofeedback, which is looking at your heartbeat and try on a monitor on your smartwatch and trying to lower it. You look at your level of cognitive stress picked up by an emotive device and our algorithms. It's just displaying in real time on your screen, and you're just trying to calm down, and you create that loop. There is unconscious mechanisms at play, but you're also trying to lower your level of stress. Whether you're going to achieve it or not, you can monitor that.
What is the effect of the intention added to that? So if you're actively trying hard to lower your stress levels or your heart rate, does that then hurt that feedback, or should it be all unconscious?
It's super complicated. There is something in psychology called the suppression effect. Is the more you try, the less you achieve. So if I manipulate your brain right now, I say, do not think of a pink elephant. Please do not think of a pink elephant. Good luck with that, man.
Words are very unnecessary. They can only do harm.
Wow. I think it's also important to add that we're just inherently bad at recognizing whether or not we're stressed out. We normalize our stress on a day to day. And so if anybody asks how you're doing, you're like, oh, I'm good. I'm fine. There's a difference between short spurts of stress that help us to focus and then long-term stress that we carry over. We don't have anything or haven't been using anything to be able to really measure that, right? To be able to track that. Say, you can leverage this device today and be able to start wearing it, start seeing, whether or not you're experiencing, long-term stress, months or weeks of stress. And could that data help us to influence us to make changes or find, different ways to be able to de-stress, adopt different behaviors, take a walk, do meditation, in the same way, like when you were talking about, okay, arbitrarily, I book meetings 1 hour chunks at a time or spend some time writing. Am I really focused during that time? How am I setting that schedule? Being able to have a device that is able to help us to understand what our learning process is, how we're able to focus. Is there something that could give me an alert to say like, hey, you've passed a certain threshold of attention and focus that really, without that type of data, that type of technology, I could spend the next hour sitting there trying to type out maybe 2 sentences worth of an essay.
Think about it, guys. As humans, and this, I'm super biased, first because I'm human, second because I am a scientist, so I'm very subjective, but I try to be rigorous. My entire life, I've been studying the gap between what people say and what they do, our intentions, our action, what we perceive, and what is really happening in our bodies. Think about it from a consumer point of view, as a patient or a worker. We are not, most of the time, able to verbalize what is happening in our bodies. We need sensors for that. And what is terrible, and I insist on terrible, is to see the number of organizations that are still relying on a bunch of questionnaires in order to assess whether people are stressed or not, whether they're feeling well or not, whether they're engaged or not. Seriously, especially in these times of COVID, with a level of anxiety that is, exploding everywhere, people stressing, most of the organizations, public and private, with best intentions at heart, have been working with people in order to coach them, to train them, to try to understand and measure how stressed people working from home with their families, with, all the worrying about their loved ones and their health. How do they cope with that? But come on, what kind of tools am I using? They're using a bunch of questions. Well, if it were an epidemic of cardiovascular problems, how would you feel if the only way people would assess whether you're going to have a heart attack or not is by a bunch of questions asking you, hey, how do you feel your heart is functioning on a scale from 0 to 10? No, you need an electroencephalogram, a technology that measures how your heart works. It's the same with the brain. Questions can be insightful at a given moment, but they never tell the entire picture. This does not mean that we need to get rid of surveys. You need to have self-reports combined with biometric measures, be them heartbeat, facial expressions, eye tracking, and of course the brain, because we're back to that point. If you're interested in human, how can one ignore how the brain works and how we can measure it now?
Wow. That is almost as fascinating as Nirav not making a single Bruce Springsteen reference this entire episode. I think with that, we'll conclude part one of this two-part series, Brain Matters, How Brain-Computer Interfaces Extend Reality. A very special thanks to our guests, Kim and Olivier. You can also find so much more great info on BCI and Emotive's products at emotive.com. That's emotiv.com. Please subscribe and tune into part two. You can also find us at xrcpod.com, that's xrseapod.com, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks for listening, and let's continue to build a more meaningful future together. Ciao.